Good. So a few words before we start. There is a new handout on the chair in the back. If you run out, there are a few more copies here. I just don't want to lose copies because they're actually, you know, expensive to make. Homework none will be on the web, I hope, today by midnight. And the final bit of regular singular points I'm skipping, but Jordan will be returning them to them today as tutorial. And we're switching to a new topic, which is qualitative behavior. And let me remind you that I've also already mentioned it. So for example, I mentioned it when we were talking about Airy's equation. We wrote the power series solution. And then I mentioned that a power series solution is actually completely useless for the purpose of seeing what the graph is. And likewise, Runge-Kutta, or, you know, I could say, yes, you can solve it with Runge-Kutta or with some approximation scheme. But that will not tell you that the picture will look like this. So let me tell you a few things about this picture. First of all, oh, it's the mirror image of the picture I was drawing last time this was on the board. And the reason was that last time I wrote it with a minus sign here, yes.
Is the reason the mirror flips because it has minus signs in it?
But in which place? I mean, yes, of course. But so there was a minus sign last time I wrote the equation, and that just means that the x got flipped with minus x. Okay? So it's the same picture, only with flipped signs, okay? With mirror image. And then we noted that the two solutions, there are two linearly independent solutions, and they look like, they don't oscillate on one side. In fact, they look like exponentials, but definitely they don't oscillate on one side. On the other side, they do oscillate. Why? Where do you see that on the power series or on the equation itself, okay? Now, if you look more closely, you'll find several other things. So the picture is not good enough to really show it, but I think there is an alternative picture of... What happened to my copy of the handout? Anyway, there is an alternative picture drawn by computer on one of the pages of the handout, page 5, okay? And if you look at it closely, and if you make a bigger picture, you'll find several further points. You'll find that the frequency of the oscillations increases. So the gap between successive zeros shrinks. Okay? Could I predict this by looking at the equation? You'll find that between any two zeros of y1, there is a zero of y2, and between any two zeros of y2, there is a zero of y1. In other words, the zeros alternate. Okay, there is a zero of y2, then of y1, then of y2, then of y1, then of y2, and so on. Again, could I have predicted it just by looking at the equation? Then you find that the magnitude, the so-called amplitude of the oscillations, shrinks to zero. Well, shrinks. Again, could I have predicted this? So, the answer is yes, but we need the tools, and we're going to get the tools now. Okay? So, first of all, a bit of philosophical comment. So, as a start, we'll study. So, start by looking at... Oh, oops, you know what? I skipped the topic. No, you know what? It's okay. Sorry, start by looking at equations of the form y double prime plus qy is equal to zero, where q is really a function. And of course, I will always assume that it is as continuous and as differentiable as I need. Okay? As I need it to be. So, here q is just the function x. Q of x is equal to x. So, how should I view this? So, let's pretend for a second that Q is greater than zero in some interval. Then what do I expect solutions to look like? If y is positive, so suppose y is here, okay, suppose I'm here, okay? If y is positive, then y double prime is equal to negative qy, which would be now a negative number. So y double prime will be less than zero. What does it mean for the second derivative to be less than zero? I think it means that it looks like this, right? By the way, I need names for the two things. So, I mean, which one is convex and which one is concave?
This one is rainbow.
What?
It's a rainbow.
Rainbow. Well, okay, rainbow. Which one is called convex and which one is called concave? I have no clue. So sometimes, so I think this is concave.
Yeah, because it looks like a cave.
And,
yeah,
oh, nice.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
Looks and like this cave. Is convex.
It looks like an X.
And alternatively, sometimes people call it convex up and convex down, but I don't know which one is which. I guess we could call this, we could call them smiley and frowny. Okay? Anyway, so here I have a frowny, or a rainbow, okay? So this means that the solution will likely further go down. It will remain frowny. So once it goes down in a certain direction, it will keep going down, okay? And then it will hit zero and it will become negative. And once y is negative, the second derivative will become, has the opposite sign, so it will become positive, so it will become smiley, okay? And then, basically what I'm telling you is that Q is a sort of restoring force, or returning force. It somehow acts as a force that wants to bend the solution in the direction of zero. If the solution was above zero, it will bend, you know, and it starts this way, it will bend, it will be a frowny and it will bend towards zero, and if it's below zero, it will be a smiley, and once again it will be it will turn towards zero. Okay? So So it does look like it might oscillate. But whether or not it will oscillate, whether or not solutions will oscillate, will depend somehow on the size of the restoring force. So you see, it could equally well look like, a solution could equally well look like something like that. This is a frowny, like square root of x, okay? Square root of x is a frowny shape that doesn't oscillate, okay? Or, you know, negative square root of x is a, well, let's make it cubic root of x, just so that, you know, make put some variety in life. It's a smiley shape that doesn't oscillate. So, if there was a differential equation of that form whose solution is square root of x, then somehow it would mean that its restoring force is not strong enough. Okay? So we have to figure out what strong enough means. Okay? But let's start in the opposite direction. So let's do the case Q is less than zero. Okay? If Q is less than zero, then we have, rather than a restoring force, what should we call it? A destroying force? No, a divergent force. I wish I had thought in advance. What's a good name for it?
Positive feedback.
A force, a positive feedback, right. An inflationary force. Sort of an inflationary force. I don't know if there is a formal name. But anyway, what does it mean? So it means that a solution can look like the following. Okay, so first of all, this is a linear equation. Okay, so if y is a solution, then negative y is a solution. So I may as well restrict my attention to solutions that start positive. Also, by multiplying by some scalar, I may as well assume that they start at 1. Okay? And then there are several possibilities. If it starts at 1 with a slope going up, well, again, q is negative, meaning that y double prime, which will be a positive multiple of y, so y double prime will be positive, okay? So, if y is greater than 0, y double prime is also greater than 0. Then y double prime is also greater than 0, which means smiley, okay? So if I start shooting up, I will only shoot up faster and faster, okay? If I start horizontal, I'll slowly start shooting up because of the smiling effect, and eventually I will shoot up faster and faster towards infinity. How fast, I don't know, by the way. I mean, it may be, like an exponential or less, okay? Now, what if I start shooting down? Now, that will depend on how strong is the inflationary force. If it is strong enough, then I will the smile will take over before I get to 0, and I'll be shooting up to infinity. Okay? If it is not strong enough, or alternatively, if I shot down with sufficient initial velocity, okay, then it will look smiley to 0, will reach 0, hit 0 with a positive slope, 1. We'll go back to this later. Okay? Hit 0 with a positive slope and become frowny. Okay? And then it will shoot to negative infinity. Okay? So these are the possibilities. So why wouldn't it be tangent? Could it be, why can't I aim at just the right angle so that it will be tangent to 0 and then it will not know whether to shoot up or shoot down? I claim this will never happen. So why? Yes?
Because then there would be certain initial values where you have non-unique solutions.
Yes, exactly. Because that would contradict existence and uniqueness. And for linear equations, existence and uniqueness is sort of guaranteed. So basically, if we had a solution that went like this, okay, then at this point, we would have y is equal to 0 and y prime is equal to 0. And by uniqueness, this implies, there is another solution we know that has these properties, and this is the 0 solution. So by uniqueness, this implies that y must be always 0, but y wasn't always 0, so therefore this is impossible. So actually, what would it look like as I bend the curve more and more? Sorry, as I shoot further and further down? Well, again, it will initially shoot straight up, then it will, then it will come closer and closer to a tangent, okay? At the limit, the point of near tangency, meaning the minimum, will go farther and farther, and possibly will go to infinity. I mean, possibly, right, after all, the function 1 over x is a smiley function that doesn't have a minimum. Okay, so it could go all the way to infinity, or it could get nearer and nearer and then shoot up. But then eventually, sorry, in fact, at the critical point, it must go towards infinity. And then, right, it must look like 1 over x. And then once you pass the critical slope, it will start shooting down. Okay, but there will be no sort of ever tangency. Okay, anyway, yes?
Just out of curiosity, is there a way of calculating the critical point where it will start being tangent?
Well, you'll have to actually solve the equations and then, okay? But not qualitatively. So, again, the point of my discussion is everything that we will do today, the next couple of weeks, well, in the remainder of this class, will be qualitative. So we will know that there are oscillations. If you want me to calculate the exact location of the zeros, only by solving the equation explicitly, which may or may not be possible. Okay? Good. Anyway, let me summarize it as a theorem, which I will not prove, because the proof is basically it's how should I say that, it's too common sensey for a formal proof. The common sense I already explained. Okay, so translating it to formality will be a waste of time. So theorem, if Q is less than zero on some connected subset of the reals, on some interval or ray, or, well, ray is sort of bounded only on one side, so not bounded on either side, so on on R. Okay, then on that interval, any solution will have at most one zero. Okay, so, you know, in the cases that I've shown, most cases I've shown have no zeros, but of course that was just my prejudice, right? I mean, I could have drawn a few more here, okay? And but if there is a zero, there will never be a second one, because once you cross zero with a positive slope, I guess negative slope, and then the slope will become even more and more and more negative because it will be from, okay? So there will be at most one zero in any interval on which the restoring force is negative. Okay? That does this side of the Aries equation. Okay? So in fact, Y1 and Y2, well, have no zeros. I guess y2 does have a zero, and it's a zero precisely when x is equal to zero, okay? But you can easily find linear combinations of y1 and y2. So basically, take y2 and subtract from it, take y1 and subtract from it a sufficiently large multiple of y1, of y2, and then add to it a sufficiently large multiple of y2, and then instead of shooting to infinity, it will start going down, okay? Right, because if I'm adding this to this, it will go down, but the claim is that it will never go up again, okay? So you could find a third solution that does have a zero, but only one zero. So that does the left-hand side. Now let's do the right-hand side. Okay? So, sorry, any questions, any comments so far? Okay. So, okay, we will now have a sequence, or eventually we will have a sequence of theorems that will tell us when is the restoring force strong enough to guarantee oscillations. Here's the first. So, theorem. If the restoring force is positive on some ray, okay, and let me not even state that I want it to be continuous, okay? I mean, otherwise such equations don't make sense. So, okay, n is continuous. Okay? And if it is strong enough, if the integral from a to infinity of q of t dt, so the total amount of force, sort of, it's not exactly force, okay, but the total amount of q, is infinite. So basically, sort of, you should think of it, there is enough force to bend things back and forth and back and forth as much as you want, then any solution y of y double prime plus qy equals zero has infinitely many zeros on our interval, the interval from a to infinity. Okay? So, proof. So, again, I will mix sort of common sense with a proof. Okay, with formulas. So let's do the picture, and the picture will tell us as much as common sense will go, and then from that point on we will use formulas. Okay? So here is the interval. It starts at A. Okay? Suppose not. So I'm arguing by contradiction. Suppose not. So suppose my Y wobbled a bit. Maybe no bit. But beyond a certain point, B, it has no zeros. Okay? Now, I may as well assume that at that point beyond which it has no zeros, it is positive. Okay? Because if it wasn't positive, I'll just take negative y. Okay? So, I may as well assume that it's positive. I claim that there will never be a point C, so such a point C will not occur in the future in which the derivative is negative. Because if the derivative is anywhere negative in the future of our solution, then, well, remember that the solution is frowny once it's on the once it's above the x-axis. Okay, so I mean, maybe I should say, oh my god, this is frowny to eternity. The solution beyond the point B is frowny to eternity. This is sort of a terrible predicament. Okay, but since it is frowny, well, the moment the derivative is negative, in fact, even if it is zero, if it was zero at some point, it will become negative immediately following that, because it's frowning, and then it will hit zero at the worst at the point where the straight line will hit zero, but probably before. Okay, certainly before. Okay, so the moral is, the conclusion is, suppose not, then there exists a point B such that on the interval from b to infinity, y is positive and y prime is also positive. Right? Because had it been negative or equal to zero, it would shoot to zero. Okay, now I no longer can sweet talk you into believing me, and I actually have to write formulas, I guess, in the resonance. So, consider the function v of x. And by the way, sort of, this will always be the theme. We will consider some function differentiated, use the differential equation and some auxiliary function, and deduce properties deduce something by studying the derivative of this auxiliary function. So consider v, which is negative y prime of x divided by y of x on the interval from b to infinity. Okay? So I have two things to say about it. First of all, v is always, let's see, it's always the quotient of two positive numbers, as we have agreed, with an extra minus sign. So v is always smaller than zero. Two, let's compute the derivative of v. Okay? Oh my god. How do you differentiate a quotient? It's negative y squared, and then you get f prime g, so y double prime y minus, am I right? Minus f g prime, so y prime, y prime. Okay?
Other way?
What?
That's right.
No,
is it low derivative of top?
No, I think this is it. I think this is it. But I have to admit that I'm not thinking it with confidence. Yeah, no, I can always go back and derive it, and I just did it, and it's right. Okay, so what do I get here? So this is, y double prime is equal to negative qy, right? So this is divided by y squared. Let me cancel the overall negative. No, let's keep it. So negative, and here I have negative qy times y minus y prime, and this is, okay, now I can cancel the negative, so this is qy squared minus y prime squared divided by y squared, and this is, okay, the y squared cancels, so I get, no, plus, sorry, I had to cancel both negatives. So this is q plus, y prime squared divided by y squared is in fact the square of v. Okay? I actually don't care that it's the square of v. I only care that it's the square of something. But it happens to be the square of v. Okay? So therefore, v of any point x, well, v is the integral of its derivative. So it's the integral from b to x of v prime of t dt, which is the integral from b to x of q of t dt plus the integral from b to x of v squared of t dt. Right? But as x goes to infinity, no. What am I doing? Sorry. The integral is not v of x. It's v of x minus v of b. Sorry. So v of x minus v of b. Okay. But the point. And this is greater than or equal to. This is the integral of something positive. So this is greater than or equal to the integral from b to x of q dt. Okay? So then the moral is, so the moral is that v of x is equal to v of b, sorry, is greater than or equal to v of b plus the integral of q of t dt from b to x. But my assumption was that the integral of q is infinity, starting from a, okay? But it will also be infinity starting from b, because the difference would be the integral from a to b, which is finite. Okay, so this integral goes to infinity when x goes to infinity. So this goes to infinity. So therefore, now v of b was negative because v was negative. But eventually, I'll add to it something that will make it positive. So, for large enough x, v of x will be positive. In fact, it will shoot to infinity. Okay? But that contradicts one. Contradicting point number one. So therefore, there must have been another zero further on. Okay? And that's the end of the proof. So, example. Well, Airy's equation. Of course, there are more. But first example will be the Airy's equation. So, y double prime plus xy is equal to 0. Take x to be, q is equal to x. The integral from 0 to infinity of x dx is infinity. QED. Airy oscillates. So do many others. So, y double prime plus y is equal to 0 oscillates. Because you see, the function q here is 1, and the integral of 1 is infinity. Okay? By the way, what are the solutions? Yes, sine and cosine. So we've just reproven that that sine and cosines oscillate. Okay? Also, y double prime plus 1 over x, y, is equal to 0. Okay? Because the integral of 1 over x is infinity. So I guess even if the restoring force is much weaker than the Airy restoring force, we already get oscillations. Actually, here's another one. Y double prime plus sine of x squared y is equal to 0. Actually, strictly speaking, I've assumed that q was positive. Was it necessary? So here q is not quite positive. There are points when it's equal to 0. Okay? You can go through the proof and you'll find that if it is zero at isolated points, it makes no difference. Okay? So, so modulo a minor revision to the proof, solutions of this also oscillate because, well, sine of x looks like a graph like sine squared of x looks like that. And it's always above zero, and the overall integral is the sum of these areas, so sort of the restoring force is supplied in pulses, but still the overall number of pulses is infinite, and you get oscillations. The oscillations will not be at the same frequency. No reason to think the oscillations will be like the oscillations of sine of x, but it will oscillate. Next example, so lots and lots of examples will have to do with Bessel's equation, which is plotted on your handout in various ways, and it's simply because it's simple enough, and it's sort of simple enough and has in it many interesting things. So next question is, what about Bessel's equation, which is x squared y double prime plus x y prime plus x squared minus alpha squared y is equal to zero. Sorry, this is Bessel's equation of order alpha. It depends on a parameter. For any alpha, you have a different Bessel's equation. Okay? So, zero is a regular singular point for this equation. That's completely irrelevant. It doesn't tell us anything about infinity. Okay. So, I need... Okay. What about the story that I told you so far? It also seems to be irrelevant because of this term. Right? I mean, we talked about the case where you have y double prime is equal to qy, plus qy is equal to zero. We didn't say what to do if there was a term depending on y prime. Okay? So let's figure out what happens if there is a term depending on y prime. So let's consider in general, so consider in general an equation of the form y double prime plus py plus py prime plus qy is equal to zero, and let's ask ourselves if it's oscillatory or not. So the trick would be to change variables, so to replace y by something else, so that the equation for the something else will have no p. And there are two ways to do it. One way would be to, the first way will be to change the so-called dependent variable, meaning to replace y by y times is this how I want to do it? Which way do I want to do it? Yeah, by by setting y to be mu times v. Okay, where mu is some function and v is the new unknown function, and the idea is to find the mu for which the p will drop out. Okay? And then there will be another way to do it. Okay, sorry, so this amounts to saying that we rescale in the vertical direction by an amount that depends on the place, so by a scaling factor mu. Okay? And later, we will also try to scale in the horizontal direction. Okay? But let's do this first. Okay? So let's substitute this y in here and figure out if we can find a mu for which p will drop out. So, okay, it's easy. So y double prime is equal to mu double prime v plus 2 mu prime v prime plus mu v double prime. This is by Leibniz's rule, or the sort of binomial form of Leibniz's rule. I guess I should have started with y prime is equal to mu prime v plus mu v prime. Substitute this into the equation, and we get, oh my god, mu double prime v plus 2 mu prime plus mu v double prime plus, now p times y prime. So p mu prime v plus p mu v prime plus q times y, but y is just mu v, is equal to 0. Okay? Now, I want to organize it as if it's an equation for v. Okay? So what is the coefficient of v double prime? Coefficient of v double prime appears only once, and the coefficient is mu. Plus, what is the coefficient of v prime? So the v prime, okay, sorry, and I already took account of this term. Where do I get a v prime? I get it twice. I get it from here and from here. So I'll get 2 mu prime plus p mu. Right? And then, what is the coefficient of v? So the coefficient of v is what remains. So mu double prime plus p mu prime plus q mu. And this should be equal to 0. Now, if I could find a mu for which this term would drop, then I'm in business. Okay? So the next step is to find a mu such that this term drops out, so 2 mu prime plus p mu is equal to 0. Now, can I find such a mu? The answer is sure. This is a linear differential equation, and we solved this at the beginning of the class. Sorry, it's a linear first order differential equation. And we solved this in the beginning of the class. Okay, so in principle, there is no difficulty in finding such a mu. And then the equation becomes what becomes of the equation? So it becomes mu v double prime plus the middle term drops, and I'm only left with mu double prime plus p mu prime plus q mu times v is equal to 0. And I guess it would be lovely to simplify this. Okay? So let's simplify this. So first of all, what's mu double prime? Mu double prime is, well, you see, since I know mu prime, I can figure out what mu double prime is. So mu prime, I guess from here, I deduce that mu prime is equal to negative p over 2 mu. Okay? So mu prime is negative p P over 2 mu prime. Okay? And this is, I guess it's Leibniz's rule. So negative P squared, oh, sorry, P prime 2 mu negative P over 2 mu prime. But this I can simplify further. This is negative P prime over 2 mu minus, so P over, well, mu prime is itself negative P over 2 mu. So I get plus P squared over 4 mu. Okay? So this took care of this term. And P mu prime, so now I'm dealing with the second one. So P mu prime is just P times this. So it's negative P squared over 2 mu. And finally, Q mu is, I have nothing good to say about it, it's Q mu. Okay? So what is this overall? So overall, the equation becomes mu v prime plus the sum of these three things. So what do I have? I have q mu. Oh, wait, all of these things are proportional to mu. So let me put the mu outside. Also the V is still outside, and also the zero is still outside. And now I just have to copy the inside. So I get, the third one is Q mu, so I get Q. And then I have to add the sum of these two, so I get negative P prime over 2, and then I get negative P squared over 2 plus positive P squared over 4, so that's negative P squared over 4. Okay? And the final step is to cancel the mu. Mu was the solution of a linear equation of order 1, so it's never 0. So I could cancel it. So therefore, the equation is equivalent to v prime plus q minus p prime over 2 minus p squared over 4 times v is equal to 0, sorry, not v prime, v double prime. That was v double prime. I failed to copy from here. I dropped one prime. Okay? And this is an equation of the type on which we have the theorem, but the restoring force, instead of being the original restoring force, is this restoring force. So it's, let's call it capital Q. Now, notice that to get from the original equation to this equation, the only thing I did was to multiply y by a function mu, which is never zero. We just found it's never zero because it's the solution of a linear equation. So oscillations don't change. Okay? If v is zero, y is also, y and v are zero at the same places. The amplitude of the oscillations might change because I'm scaling on the vertical direction. But the presence of oscillations is not changed. Not changed. So let me add it as a summary. So zeros stay put, though amplitudes may change. Okay, so now back to Bessel. Let's check what happens. So, for Bessel, let's see, what is P? P is the coefficient of X But after I made the coefficient of y double prime be 1, right, because the all my development here was assuming the coefficient of y double prime was 1. So I have to divide by x squared. So p is x divided by x squared. So for Bessel, p is equal to 1 over x, and q is equal to whatever is written here, divided by x squared. So it's 1 minus alpha squared divided by x squared. So I guess, yeah, okay. So q is equal to, oh my god, what is it? It's this q, 1 minus alpha squared divided by x squared, minus p prime over 2, minus, what's the derivative of 1 over x? It's negative 1 over x squared, but I also have a minus here, so it's positive 1 over x squared. I guess, let me copy. This is q, this is p prime over 2, and I should add the 2 here, okay? And then the last term is negative p squared, sorry, negative p squared over 4, but p is 1 over x, so negative 1 over x squared over 4. Do I have it right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what is this? You know, when I'm doing things like that, I tend to make silly mistakes. So let me make sure that I didn't. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I don't know. I didn't do it at home. Sorry. So what do I get? 1 minus... Well, okay, the denominator will certainly be x squared. And the numerator is, let me do it with a plus. So alpha squared, no, sorry, minus alpha squared plus 1/2 minus 1/4, so plus 1/4. Okay? Hey, I actually completely don't care. Okay? Because, wait, first of all, let me see. Is this consistent with what I got at home? It's consistent, yeah. But I really don't care what happens here, because the integral of q of t, dt, starting from, well, I can start at 0 because it would be 0. So starting from 7 and going to infinity, will be infinity, because I'm integrating 1, which is infinity, and maybe, I don't know even if this if the coefficient here will be positive or negative, that will depend on the value of alpha, but still it's the integral of 1 over x squared, which is convergent. So I'm adding a convergent integral to a divergent integral, and the result is divergent. Okay, so therefore, Bessel oscillates. Or really what I mean is any solution of the Bessel equation will have infinitely many oscillations as x goes to infinity. Time to quit.